Hey everyone, Tawny here. I am so excited to share that my husband and I launched a non-alcoholic beverage called Parentheses. It's technically two drinks, a before and an after. The before uses herbs that stimulate the senses, and the after uses herbs that calm the senses. Head to drinkparentheses.com and follow us at drinkparentheses.
I was going to say, do you want to start with art? Because do you want to be the opener for art?
Yeah,
or sure. I can. I'm totally happy to. Either way.
Yeah, why don't you start with art?
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Or I don't know. Who should I don't know that it matters.
I'm nervous. Yeah. What, you're nervous? Maybe would you be less nervous if you did the intro? Because that's
probably
easier, sort of. You do the intro to that. You can okay. Do the intro to this one too. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm so excited for this blooper reel.
Yeah.
Honestly, that would be really great promo for our card deck. We need a blooper reel for the card deck. That would be kind of funny.
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah, Colin, do you know a guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I want for the art interview, we do want the video of that. If you could send me that.
He won't be on video though, right?
Oh, he won't?
Didn't he say he just wanted to do audio?
Oh, did he? I didn't see that.
I thought you had written and said, hey, it's art, we do, I don't know. We'll see.
Let's see. Because
I thought he had said, like, video. Yeah, it's going to be recorded either way, so.
Okay, I'll start this. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Recovery Rocks. It's your girl, Tawny, joined by my fabulous bestie, McBesterson.
It's Lisa. What's up, my love?
How's it going?
It's going. It's going okay. No complaints here.
I want to talk about homes.
Homes.
How does that sound?
Homes and not Sherlock Holmes.
Not Sherlock Holmes, no. I want to talk about really bringing recovery and mindfulness into your home.
Yeah.
This is something that has been pretty big on my home and recovery has been a pretty big part of my life since Nick and I moved into this bigger apartment. You know, I have a home office now.
Yeah.
The dream of dreams. Like, I can't believe I get to have a home office while living in Manhattan. It's truly crazy. And I have these moments where I'm just literally every day, Lisa, I'm like, I can't believe I get to live here.
I know. It's, you've done it.
We were sharing a one bedroom apartment and it was fine. You know, it was fine. But a three bedroom opened up in our building It was fine. There's flames behind me.
Right.
Three bedroom opened up one floor down and I hopped on it. And I'm so glad that I did. And that has been such a big part of my growth, really, is I'm learning how to nest. I've never nested before.
Yeah.
I was always on the go in childhood. And that's something I brought into my adulthood. I never even hung art. I never got curtains. I never decorated a home.
Yeah.
Until the pandemic, really. But really, like when we moved into this new place, I'm learning how to create a space that I feel safe and happy and comfortable in. And there's this article in Washington Post in mid-February that you and I both read, and we really loved the message of it. So we're going to have that in the show notes. It was actually, the piece was written by a woman in recovery from an eating disorder. And she talks about how she got home from treatment and she had to learn how to love her kitchen. She had to put food and appliances and in different she had to find ways to feel comfortable and reorient herself in her kitchen while incorporating eating disorder recovery into her daily life. And it's such a beautiful piece. We highly recommend reading it. It's so vulnerable. And it's something that I don't think is talked about enough is like, yes, people go to treatment and that's amazing. But what happens when you get back from treatment? When you're back in your home, you're surrounded by the people that you used to, the people, places, and things that might trigger your eating disorder, might trigger your drinking or any other self-destructive behavior. And this piece really digs into the importance of creating a comfortable, safe space.
Yeah, I hadn't associated it, like the idea of setting your home up as its own thing. But, you know, it was sort of like, oh, I think I'll feel better if I put this over here, or I think I'll, whatever. But to think of it comprehensively, like I want a home that's set up for recovery. Right.
Yeah.
And that gives it a whole additional kind of depth and to make it meaningful. I mean, it's interesting because I remember the one bedroom. I visited you now a couple of times at your house with your home office that you have painted your color, that you have like, oh, it is so. There's so much thought and care put into every object in that room that really feeds you. I really see that. And I love that so much. I, like you, when I was drinking and using drugs, like there was, you know, the most decor there was in my home was a pile of unopened mail, you know, like that was it. There was nothing on the walls. There was nothing anywhere. And, I got to be honest, for me, like the idea, I didn't decorate my place in a way that, you know, felt warm or anything. I never got into decorating. But what I did do was make it, you know, conducive to my recovery, which was like, you know, getting all of the booze out, right? There's no booze in my apartment. Doing things like cleaning out my closet and having it organized in a way, like the kind of make your bed sort of things that I started doing. And I did things that, and some of the things that, because I'm just not, I've never been somebody who has any kind of flair for decorating or anything like that. Like Tawny knows this, that in both of our places, Craig did, he's totally into all that stuff. He did all the picking out of every piece of furniture, of every whatever. And, you know, I am very happy with that. I love his taste. That's great. I'll do it. I think it frustrates him that I don't have more of an opinion on this stuff. But, you know, the idea like of avoiding the things that I don't want was more important, or was the only thing I could really do. That's a really good point.
Yeah. Like so it's like no certain foods, no alcohol, no, like you were more focused on getting things out of your home rather than figuring out what you want in your home.
In a way. Yeah. But then also doing over time, the little things that made recovery better, right? Getting some fancy shit for the bath. Buying like 100 pairs of pajamas, like doing the things that felt homey to me in that sense. And I loved in the article, we're putting the free link in, that one of the people who was interviewed for it, she says with her clients, and this again was focused on the eating disorders, but with clients, I typically start by asking, what about your kitchen leads you to avoid it, right? And that was, you know, is it an emotional thing? Is it a physical thing? She says, if you can't change the physical landscape of your kitchen, how can you at least make it more functional and more inviting? And sort of that, I think that's how I, you know, kind of approach it. Like I wanted things to function and then I put little treats in different places.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I love that because it's, you know, I've never asked myself, how I want my kitchen to function. Right. You know, I've never thought about that. And Nick and I, we love food. We cook. We are very into food and drink. So, you know, and the fact that we've never thought like, how do we want it to function? Because we're not going to do big, structural changes. Like our kitchen is our kitchen.
Right.
We don't own it. So like what can we do? And it's also like, if we're in there together, we have to like figure out where to stand and like what works and what doesn't. But it's, you know, the fact that I just love that person asked that question in this article, because it's about eating disorder recovery in the kitchen, but it's also like, how do you want your office to function? How do you want to feel when you're in your bathroom? How do you want to feel when you're in your bedroom?
That's exactly right.
I think that that's something that you can take with you into all these different rooms. And even there's a fabulous show on Netflix. It's a couple years old. It's called How to Build a Sex Room. Did you watch it?
Oh God, I didn't watch it.
So it's this, a sex educator who is also an interior designer. She works with couples to help them create a sex room, a room in their home that is designed just for intimacy. And while some people want, you know, all of the bells and whistles, literally, all of the toys and stuff like that, some couples really just want like a quiet sanctuary where the kids are not allowed, no laptops, no screens, just a place where you can go, where you can just shut off the rest of your home and just be intimate together.
Yeah.
And you know, that I think I never thought about that before. Like, Nick and I do not have a sex room, you know, but what I, every room's a sex room. But you know, that show did inspire me to think like, okay, well, how is my bedroom set up? How do I feel when I'm in my bedroom?
Right.
And you know, I'm really trying my hardest I try not to work with my laptop in the bedroom. I try to let that be just a place where I rest and allow intimacy and nothing else, you know, because that was such a game changer, like a mindset shift for me to really think about how I want to feel in certain rooms.
Oh my God. That just triggered struck me so much, because especially in the last 18 months of my using, when I was 24/7 around the clock with alcohol and cocaine, I was constantly working, quote unquote, at home, right? Mm-hmm. I had a lot of flexibility. I didn't have to be in the office, but I'd always have my laptop open. I'd always, lines in the bathroom, glass of wine in the living room lines in the bedroom, glass of wine in the living room with me. And I would, that's how I would work. And one of the things when I got sober, one of the very first things I did was say, because my job also permits for this, I'm not working at home anymore. I'm not bringing my laptop home, my work laptop home. I am not, because that to me, opening up the computer and trying to get in the work headspace at home was so triggering to me. Like I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So I was like, if it has to get done, I'm going to, and not everybody's job is like this at the time, you know, of course this was, you know, 20 years ago. So it was, you know, nobody worked at home. Nobody was, you know, it was very few people like me who could work at home. And so I was like, when I need to work, I'm going into the office and I'm working. And when I leave, I'm not working at home on my couch, because that was probably the place and way I spent the most time in my addiction, sitting on that couch, half-ass working, TV online, wine, cigarettes, the whole thing going on for days. And taking that out of the home, you know, really made such a difference to me. And also, go ahead.
Well, okay. That's a really good point of how working from home has really changed everyone's relationship with their home.
Yeah.
And the boundary, like you said, that's hard to draw that kind of boundary now where remote work is the norm.
Yeah.
And you are expected to be available to answer an email at all times.
Yeah.
So it really requires a great deal of boundaries and having like, I try my hardest to only work in here in my office. It's not all, let's be real. That's not how it always is.
Right.
But that is something that I really, really go out of my way to do. Because in the one bedroom apartment, our bedroom was also my office. So that was not sexy. You know, that was not relaxing. But my therapist had the greatest idea. She recommended that I get a room divider. And
that's right. I remember that.
Do you remember my room divider, my cherry blossom room divider? I put that behind my desk and that helped me feel like I was in an official office. I didn't want to turn around and see the bed. It was really difficult for me to work like that.
Yeah.
And we still have those room dividers and we use them for other things in the house. But so like, if you're listening and you're thinking, God, that sounds really nice, but I don't have a home office. I don't have the space to do any of this. I didn't either until very recently. And I highly recommend considering a room divider so you can create these little spaces within existing spaces.
Yes. It's so true. Yeah. And I think too, the other thing that I'm thinking about, like when I would, I think a place to start thinking about this maybe is when you walk in to your home, right? When you walk, like for me at the end of the day, I would come back from work, I would walk into my home and directly in front of me was the kitchen where I would directly go drop my keys on the counter. And before I took my coat off, pour a drink, right? And so I had to, and it was so reflexive because I, you know, when I got sober, I'd been drinking every night for 10 years. So it was so automatic and I had a sort of change. I remember what I did. I was like, okay, I'm going to take off my coat, hang it up, put my keys down. Then I'm going to go into the bedroom, put on pajamas, wash my face, and then I'm going to go into the kitchen and get something to drink. So like breaking up how you live in your home can also be
a way. So it's almost like the washing your face it's signaling. Like
it's okay, I'm home. We're done for the day. And I managed to not go directly into the kitchen and pour a glass of wine, which at that point I couldn't do because I had poured it all out. But not everybody can do that. If you live with someone, you know, who is a normie and you have alcohol in your home, it's not so easy, right?
Yeah.
But just to try and set up that kind of changing up the routine as well as changing up the actual space in it, I think is helpful.
Which is like really, I think like recovery 101, right? You know, you get rid of the alcohol or you're addressing the eating disorder. You can't just get rid of the alcohol. You have to replace. You have to replace. Okay, well, what was I doing? What was I doing? I was drinking 6 glasses of wine a night. Okay, now what am I going to do with those extra hours? How am I going to take care of myself? So it's the same kind of mindset of like really finding new rituals, finding new hobbies, and you know, bringing those into your home. And also, you know, maybe being home alone is triggering for you. Maybe you actually need to go out and you need to go to a movie, whether alone or with a friend. Like if being at home was where you did a lot of your self-destructive habits, you might need to get out.
Yes.
You know, more often.
I was frankly terrified to go to live in my apartment. I remember thinking when I was still in the detox, I remember thinking, how am I going to go back and live in my apartment? Do I have to move? I remember thinking, because so much, and my apartment was, you know, I told you the last 18 months, but even before, my apartment was like party central, like all our friends gathered at my place. And then, you know, we did go to other people's places, but there was so much partying done in my place. And I was terrified of really going home. And while I was in the detox, I didn't know this at the time, but my friends, Russell and Dorothy, went over to my apartment and just had it like cleaned. Like it was, my apartment was like basically an ashtray when I left it. And when I got back, it was like clean and shiny and it smelled like lemons, it, you know, and there was no booze in there. And
who cleaned your home?
Russell and Dorothy.
Oh
yeah. Yeah.
I love
and
that.
And just got everything out. And, you know, from then on, I was like, but then it felt good once I got through the, you know, the first bit, first couple of weeks, I'd say, then it felt good. I'm like, wait, no, I'm reclaiming this. This is a great apartment and I love this apartment and I am not going to feel bad in this apartment. I'm going to make this, you know, I'm going to retake my apartment in a different way.
You know, I respect that so much because I don't, I'm trying to think how I would have done that. I moved and I didn't have any of that. I started over when I moved to New York.
Right. So that's right. That's right.
But on that note, it is more difficult for me to go home, to go back to Texas because of that. It's the people, places, and things, you know, the home isn't, it's no longer there, but it could bring up a lot. And I think essentially what you and I are saying is like, you know, your home really deserves to be treated with love and respect, just like you, you know, just like we do. And when we're in new sobriety and new recovery, it's really hard to learn how to take care of ourselves and love ourselves when we were self-destructing for so long. And those self-destructive habits or those destructive habits probably wreaked havoc in your relationships, in your work, in your home. So, in fact, they did. I know. Like, so I'm so sorry to tell you, but so it's important to really honor and nurture that.
Yeah.
You know, this is a thing. Like, this is why we say one day at a time, because if you really like zoom in and you think, oh my God, I need to fix all this shit.
Right.
It's going to be too overwhelming.
No, exactly. It was not a home makeover. It was things that happened over time, right? Like, oh, pajamas. Oh, nice stuff for the bath, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever it was, like, it was a thing over time. Like, you know, like I started lighting candles. I wish I did that more. I've fallen off that. But, you know, those kinds of things, it is your home is something that kind of holds you, right? And there's a lot of places like that can be, I know, for instance, you have your meditation closet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which is incredible that you've got all set up. But then, you know, for people who have someone else in the home, like I have, Craig and I have our common areas, and then he's got, because Craig, I have a thing where I can't live in any kind of chaos. Everything has to be very neat and put away and whatever, because I used to live that way. And that was my life. And it's not my life today. And so, you know, he's got stuff laying around, but there's an area where he can put his stuff. You remember in my apartment in New York.
You and I have had many conversations offline.
Yes.
About our husbands,
yes.
They have some similarities, let's just say. And I will say, collecting, that's a great way to, but us having our own home offices has completely changed it because like you're saying, we have our messes in our own spaces. We have our common areas and we have the bedroom and we have the living room and we have the kitchen. And so, you know, I'm glad that you brought this up because when you're living with someone, this is a whole different conversation. You know, you have to figure out what works for you guys as a team
who
share a home. And again, that requires a lot of self-awareness. It requires some vulnerability, asking for what you need. These are really tough skills that I didn't have those in early recovery. You know, I had no idea. So it's important to give yourself grace here. If all you take from this article and this conversation is being a little bit more mindful of how you arrange or decorate your home, then you've nailed it.
Yes.
You know, like that's all we're saying. We're not trying to put any pressure on, you know, home organization or anything. It really is just finding a living situation that helps you in your recovery as opposed to hinders your recovery. Like you said, you and I share, we can't handle clutter. We can't handle the chaos because it reminds us of when we were sick.
Right.
So again, it took me a while to understand that connection. It took me years to figure out that the clutter in my home was actually making me anxious.
Oh my gosh.
So it's not, you're not going to come home from rehab and then just clean.
Right.
You know, the important thing is to keep up whatever outpatient treatment you have going on, check in with mental health professionals, clean if it feels right.
When it feels right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you live with someone else like me, like with Craig, I would say like, I can't have this mask, like you gotta whatever, because this is how it makes me feel. Like it's triggering to me to be in mass. And it took me like 3 conversations with him for it to actually sink in. But once it sunk in, like he really respected it and respects it. Like now all I have, if there's stuff all over the kitchen counters that he's been going through mail or whatever kind of stuff he's got going on, all I have to say is, this is mission creep. We call it mission creep. And, you know, I also say like, it's on the clock. It's got 48 hours. And if it's still there, I'm going to move it somewhere.
I like that. So there's a little time limit.
Yeah. And I think that's okay. You have to kind of advocate for yourself. And he respects it too. He's not, you know, he doesn't push back on that. He's like, yeah, you're right. You know, I got to do that.
We do that too, where it's like, if I do ask for something, you know, home wise, he's like, yeah, you know, he'll give himself a deadline and it works.
It does work.
That's another thing is like with my codependency recovery, you know, all this stuff is connected, you know?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, instead of communicating how clutter made me feel, I would just clean it.
Yeah.
And then it would just get dirty again because I wasn't addressing the actual problem.
It's absolutely true. Yeah.
And then there's also the awareness of I need to also be aware, like I married someone who
feels collects clutter.
Who feels So there's also like, okay, I chose this.
Right.
I'm choosing this relationship.
Right.
So it's a lot of communication. It's a lot of, like you said, it took 3 conversations for Craig to really get what you were saying.
Because he's a normie. He doesn't get everything.
Yeah. It's a lot. We've thrown a lot out, but it's like, I think I really love this episode because I don't think until I moved into this home, I didn't realize how important home life is to my sanity, to my homeostasis, to my recovery. And having a place that I can go that is just mine is fucking game changing.
Yes. Yes, I agree. What music would you put to this, my love?
My love. So I'm thinking of, what's this? Oh, Home by Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros. You know this song. I know you do.
All right, I'm going to have to find it.
And then there's another one called Home by Philip Phillips. He is from American Idol. But there's a few home songs.
Yeah, I love Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Our House.
Oh.
I know, right? And the other one that makes me always feel like home is... The Talking Heads, This Must Be the Place.
Yes.
Opens up with the word home. Home is where I want to be.
Our House is also a song by Madness. Remember that song?
Yes.
Our house in the middle of our street.
Yep.
We're not singers, but we do love music.
No, but we do. Yeah. So lots of home stuff. I love it. And, you know, again, it's something not to put pressure on. It is, you know, something that we work into our recovery over time.
Yeah, exactly. And it truly is one day at a time. And I think if this episode, like I said, inspires you to maybe just be aware mm-hmm. of the home and the way that your home, the role that your home plays in your recovery, then like that's our goal in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we, you know, encourage you to read this article that's in the show notes. It's really great. It's a reported essay. So she writes about her experience, but she also interviews some experts, mental health professionals, interior decorators that really give some good tangible tips on how to personalize your home for your mental health.
Yeah. Well, thanks for floating that by me, Tawny.
Hey, anytime. thank you for reading and humoring me. I think this was a good, yeah. I think this was a good chat. So, yeah. If this episode inspired you to like rearrange your kitchen, please let us know.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.